Well, good evening and welcome to Nonstop SysOp, episode one. This is our first episode, as the name would imply. We are excited to get this show started and hopefully put some interesting content out there for those of you who are interested in listening. I do want to give you a little rundown in this first episode of what the show is going to be about, what the format is going to look like, and the scheduling. I think this will be important for everyone to know as we get started. We'll start with the about me. So I'll share a little bit about myself. I am a geek. I've been messing with computers, building computers, that type of thing for many years. It kind of started when I was in junior high school. And I had a friend who was really into computers, much smarter than me, taught me most of what I know in those early years, and got me started down the path of becoming a real geek. And always been into science fiction, whether that's in books or TV or movies. And so really enjoy anything of a geeky nature, whether it's gaming, building computers, so hardware, software, anything like that really piques my interest. I am a husband, so I'm married. I've been married for 25 years to my wife. Her name is Amy. My name is Phil Williams, and so Amy and I have been married for 25 years. We just celebrated our anniversary last November and are working hard now on year 26 together. And we are the proud parents of six children, so I have six total children, four of those biological, two were adopted. Both of our adopted children were adopted from China, and they were each adopted 1 year apart. They are not biologically related, but many people, because of their age, often confuse that and assume that they are. So we have a son in his 20s. His name is Luke. Luke is now living in Boston. He is a flight attendant with an airline. And so he is living his best life and just having a great time there in Boston and working with airline, flying to all points across the world. So he's having a blast. My daughter, Eden, is in her 20s. She lives in Huntsville, Alabama, and she runs a martial arts program for preschools, and she's really good at martial arts. She is a competitor on a national circuit, as are many of the members of my family, for martial arts tournaments. And so she's having a blast down in Huntsville. And then I have a son, Elijah Williams, who actually is a streamer. He streams a lot of his gaming and stuff that he does in the evenings. And so his name is Just Velocity. So I'll share some information in the show notes if you want to check out Elijah and his stream. I'm sure he would enjoy getting a bump to his viewers, and I would appreciate that. And I have a son named Aaron. Aaron is 15. He is soon to be driving on his own, and he also is big into martial arts, as are the rest of his siblings. And is also on a national competition team and a national circuit that travels all around the United States doing his martial arts thing. And so we also, after Aaron, have our two adopted children, Miri and Jonah. So Miri is just recently turned 9, and then Jonah is 8. And both of them have special needs. So Miri and Jonah are both fully blind for different reasons, and maybe in a later show we can cover that, go into a little detail as to what their special needs are beyond being fully blind and kind of how they became blind. But so that is a unique thing that often will probably come up in the show just because it's a unique part of our lives. And Miri and Jonah both attend the School for the Blind, and so they are getting some great training and education. Things that I couldn't teach them, and so we're really thankful for what they're getting there. And for those of you who do not know me or my family, we live in Tennessee, so we are, I am a big fan of Tennessee. I'm originally from Chattanooga. My wife's family was from Montgomery, Alabama, which was a place that we lived for a number of years after we got married, and then eventually made the move up to Middle Tennessee, where we're happy to be now. and all seem to be enjoying it, the entire family, other than our two that live away from home now. So that's a little bit about me as a person. I guess I'll go into a little bit of my background. So we will get to where the name of the show came from shortly as well. But a little bit about my background. So I've been in IT, information technology, for over 20 years. I started off in IT operations. I started off at a bench at a computer shop building computers and repairing personal computers that people would bring in off the street. Eventually moved into an IT operations role with a Air Force squadron that was located down in Alabama, close to where we lived, and began to work with network performance monitoring applications and fault management applications. So what's up, what's down on the network? How's it working? How's it performing? Is it doing what it's supposed to do? And we did that for systems across the AFNET, or the Air Force network at large. So interesting that that type of work happens there in Montgomery, Alabama. Many people wouldn't suspect it. So I worked there doing that type of work for a number of years, and eventually began managing the team that was responsible for all the network applications, the monitoring applications on the network. And then also in my career, I've done security operations. So I have worked with host-based intrusion, perimeter security, a number of different things in that respect, and a number of different roles around those things. So very familiar with both IT operations and the security operations domains. And then also I've done a lot of work in the big data space. Years ago, I took a role with a software company over on the West Coast. You may find out over time the name of the company, but for now, I'll just leave it as, I worked for a software company that was based out of San Francisco that was in the big data space, and began working with customers there. Actually, the squadron that I was at with the Air Force as an engineer there, where I was a contractor, was not prior military. That customer used the software at the company that I went to work for. And since I've been at that company, I've worked with many other customers, both within the Air Force, within commercial, within other branches of the military, and all across DOD and even some of our intelligence community. So that's been, a fun part of my career as well. And in that role, I've been mainly in technical sales. So I've been either a sales engineer or some type of solutions consultant, now in a leadership role in technical sales. I've done that actually for two large software companies that were sort of in somewhat of the same space. And so now I'm responsible for a team of highly advanced consultants that are all much smarter than I am. Who work with our customers on a daily basis to help them understand the value that our products bring to their mission sets. And so that's a little bit about my background and me as a person, but also me and my career. I wanted to give you a little bit of information now about the format of the show. So those of you who are tuned in, hopefully we'll have you listen to the show again in the future. And you may wonder, what's the format going to look like? What's the schedule? When are we going to get new episodes? And so I'll share that with you now. First off, to give you a little bit of background about the show name. So Nonstop SysOp, where did that come from? The term SysOp, as hopefully many of you know, especially those of you who may be older in our audience, there used to be systems known as BBSs, bulletin board systems. And this is back in the day before the internet became big, before the curated internet services, even before everyone had access to mainstream internet. There were even services such as CompuServe and Prodigy and AOL and things like that. Well, even before those types of services, folks who had modems on their computers that were connected to phone lines would dial into servers that were set up to allow people to connect and do various things. And so those systems were called bulletin board systems. This is kind of pre-internet, as most of us would know it. But you could dial into these services and exchange messages, chat, share files, interact in a number of other ways. And many of these humble systems that you would dial into, these BBSs, were simple desktop computers that were sitting in somebody's house that they had configured for this purpose. So these were not, mainframe computers. These were not beasts of computers. These were just simple workstations that had just been configured as servers to serve this purpose. And so many people would dial in and then interact with folks. It was very personal. And the reason for that was these bulletin board systems, because they use dial-up, you know, you would want to dial into a local system as opposed to one that was further away because you didn't want to incur long-distance charges. And so there typically would be numbers in your local area that you could dial into and connect to one of these services. And or, you know, the server may be located somewhere else, but they would have numbers that you could dial in your local area. But they, because of that, they tended to be much more personal in nature, as opposed to kind of the way the internet is now, where you can visit sites all day long, even social networking sites. You know, you may hit Facebook 5 or 6 times a day and your friends never know that you were on Facebook. Well, this is much different. When you connected and you know, chatted online or dropped a message that your friend would then later connect during the day and see that you dropped on there. And so there's similarities, I guess, between BBSs and systems that we use today, but there definitely were many, many differences. And the people who managed those servers were called SysOps, system operators. So those were the admins. Those were the people who controlled the server and kind of managed it and offered those services for other people. So that's where the name SysOp comes from. And you know, in my house and the way I view it, I'm the SysOp here. I keep everything running. I keep all the internet's up and, you know, running because I have my firewall running at home and I'm managing all these services in my home for all the users here. And so that's kind of where the SysOp comes from. And nonstop, just, you know, the idea of it's constantly what I do. I'm always sysopping. I'm always running the systems and keeping them up. And whether that's at work or at home, wherever it may be, that's kind of what I do. And so that's where the name of the show came from. And I know many of you out there are home labbers or other things where you're doing very similar activities. And hopefully we'll connect in that space and you'll find some interest here in the show. That's kind of what I'm really hoping for in the long run. By the way, BBS is just to give you a little bit of information. The first BBS was called CBBS. I believe that stood for Computer Bulletin Board System. And that software was written by Ward Christensen and Randy Seuss in 1978. And they invented it as a way to stay connected with their local computer group. And it was like a club. And they were having a particularly bad winter. And there was a blizzard. So they wrote the software just to kind of give them a way to connect and keep up with everyone as opposed to like getting together and having to go out and get in the weather. So that was kind of where the introduction of the bulletin board system came from, and hence where the name of this show came from, Nonstop SysOp. So format, what we'll typically do each time we begin the show is a quick intro for those who have not listened to the show, who don't kind of know the background. It certainly won't be as much detail as I'm providing today, but we will go into an introduction for folks to be aware of what the show is about, and then potentially read ahead through, you know, what the show, that particular episode, may contain. So maybe a little read ahead for that. Then we'll move into sponsors and patrons. So I am going to give people the opportunity to sponsor the show. For those of you who may want to be patrons, to give monthly or one-time gifts to the show so that we can take those funds and turn them back into resources to make the show better for you. Then we will have the opportunity to do that. And during that time in the show, I will take time to recognize certain sponsors and patrons, so not just companies or others that we may get to advertise with us, but also individual contributors, and give an opportunity to share some of your social information or some way for users to get in contact with you, your website, just to give a little back to you for giving to our team. So then we'll, after sponsors and patrons, we'll move into sharing comments, letters, and follow-up materials from previous episodes. So since we don't have a time on this show for you to directly interact with me, what I want to do is follow up with comments and things that come in from email and comments on our website from each episode. Maybe take a little segment, a little section of time to kind of read back some of those comments and thoughts that people shared following the episode. So if you'll tune in to the next episode, you should hear comments and things that were shared after this one, which I think will be very interesting. And I do look forward to hearing your comments and thoughts following the episode. After we get through that section, we'll go into what I would like to do each week, which will be a tip of the week. And that tip could be something related to security, related to an app, a mobile app, or something similar, or hacks, or similar things that might be interesting to you. It'll be a quick little segment in the show, hopefully something that would be useful for you, hopefully something you don't know already. And then we will move into probably 2 to 3 news stories or articles that I've found throughout the week that I found interesting. So this is kind of a curated content section. We'll go through that, and I'll share with you kind of my thoughts, you know, kind of share with you what I've read and gleaned through the information I've collected prior to the episode being recorded, and then look forward to your comments and feedback on it afterward. And then we'll move into kind of a closing comment section where I'll summarize and sum up the activities of the episode, and then make a call for your participation and for you to reach back out and get in touch with me and allow me to really build what I hope to be community here with this podcast. And then we'll close up the show. Now, as far as schedules, what I would like to do is make this a weekly podcast. The goal is to publish a new episode every Sunday evening so that I can get through editing, get all my material throughout the week, get the show posted on Sunday evening for you to begin consuming throughout the week, whether you're listening while you're jogging, driving on your commute, sitting at the office, whatever the case may be, so that you'll have that by the beginning of the week to stack in amongst all the other podcast you're probably listening to during the week. So that is the goal. Now, we may have some additional episodes or something that, you know, special episodes that come up throughout the year. We definitely will potentially have episodes that need to be canceled or postponed due to different things, and I will try to alert you both on the website and in the previous episode release if there's going to be a future episode that will be skipped or missed or postponed due to some activity or other thing going on where I'm unable to get the content posted. But that is the plan for the schedule as it stands right now. Now, of course, a lot of things can change. I'm at this point looking only at doing a audio podcast. But, you know, there is potential down the road for us to potentially do a video podcast. Probably, you know, before we do a video podcast, we would probably do some video content that we use to supplement our audio podcast. And I could put that up on YouTube and then kind of share that on the website for folks to consume. And then if we do see some interest there, then we could do a video podcast. Honestly, I'm not much to look at, so I think the audio content is going to be plenty for now. But I do know that, you know, a lot of people prefer video content and having something to look at while they're listening. And so, you know, if at such time I feel like I have a studio that's in much better shape to be able to do some type of video content, then we could consider doing that down the road as well. But at the moment, this is where we're at. We will be doing a weekly release of an audio podcast. And with that said, I think that's all kind of the information I needed to give out about the show. We will now move into our content for the day. And so we will start with our tip of the day. Okay, our tip for the day is related to usernames and passwords. Stop reusing username and password combinations. Why is this important? All right, so what this does is it eliminates it limits your surface exposure. So let's say you're using the same username and password across all the different sites and services that you visit on a regular basis. If a hacker were to get a hold of one username password combination, then he or she has them all. That is not a good idea. I know it's a pain. I remember the days, you know, I've already talked about BBSs, so I've dated myself pretty well anyway. But I remember the day when our passwords could be, you know, 6-8 characters long, did not have to be alphanumeric, did not have to have a special character. I get it. It's frustrating to have to have a 15 or more character password that's, you know, got all these crazy complexity requirements, and then have to do that for every single service that you use. Yes, I get it. It's frustrating. However, it is the time that we live in, and you don't want someone getting your Instagram username and password and at the same time owning your bank account because they have your bank account username and password. Now, I know there's a lot of factors that would have to come into play for them to be able to know what bank you use, the website of your bank, and all that kind of stuff. But the fact is, people can get that information, and if you make it easy for them by giving them your username and password, then half of their work is already done for them. So don't do that. Take thought. Be very intentional about the way you create your usernames and passwords, and do not reuse those usernames and passwords. That's our tip for the day. It's a security tip, and hopefully we'll have many more interesting tips coming for you as we continue to release more and more episodes down the road. So that is our tip of the day. Now we'll move into some content that we've been looking at this week, and hopefully you'll find at least one or more of these interesting. We really value your feedback, so if there's one of these articles or news bits that we share with you that you find interesting, please do comment at our website and let us know that you found it interesting. All right, the first article that I wanted to cover today is related to Apple's announcement that we can start using security keys for our Apple ID. Now, this is pretty interesting. I, for one, have been an avid user of security keys. I had a friend a number of years ago introduce me to a company called Yubico that has a number of YubiKeys, what they call YubiKeys, Y-U-B-I-K-E-Y. And these YubiKeys support a number of different functions. They support FIDO. They support, of course, universal second factor smart card, so they're PIV compatible. They have OpenPGP, blah, blah, blah. There's all kinds of features included with these keys. They typically cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $50 or so U.S., and what they do is they allow you to have a hardware key with you that you can use for authentication. Now, for some of you who may not be familiar with different types of authentication, you're probably at least familiar with the first first well-known type of authentication, and that is password or personal identification pins. So many of you use a pin or a password on your phone or some other services that you use, and everyone's familiar with passwords. The problem with passwords is that if you look at NIST, you know, some of the guidance around authentication, they will tell you that there are various factors. One of the factors is something you know, and that would be something like a password or personal identification number. Then there are things that you would call something you have. This would be something like a cryptographic device or a token or a hardware key, which is what I'm talking about today. And then there's another factor, which is something you are, which is something biometric, so an iris or a fingerprint that's unique to you, but it's who you are, something you're made of. And so these are various factors of authentication. And in the past, you've been able to authenticate with Apple ID using, you know, that first factor, which is just a username and password. And that allowed you to, you know, do the things that you can do with your Apple ID. So access, you know, various services that Apple has. But what you're able to do with the security keys tied into your Apple ID are use this trusted security key to sign in to your Apple ID on a new device or on the web. So if you needed to sign in to your Apple ID, or you have a new device that you want to set up with your Apple ID, let's say you got a new phone, then you could use this security key as part of that process. You could also use it to reset your Apple ID password, or to unlock your Apple ID if for some reason it got locked. You can also, of course, use a security key to add additional security keys, because you can have multiples of them in different formats, or to remove a security key that you've added in the first place. What you cannot do is sign into iCloud for Windows with a security key. You also can't sign into older devices that can't be updated to a software version that supports security keys, of course. So that makes sense. And there's a couple of other restrictions. I'll post in the show notes the article from Apple where it talks about security keys, how you can use them. There is also a little detail around which keys work best. So there are NFC keys, near field communication keys that can work just by holding them up behind your phone. Then there are Lightning or USB-C security keys that you can pop in that will allow you to authenticate as well. Now, typically what these keys do is you pop them in, and then a light or something will light up, and there's a contact on the key that you press, and that's kind of the initiation of, okay, the key is being used. And what that does is instead of just having something you know, this now brings in that second factor of authentication, which is something you have. So now not only can someone know your password, but they have to also have this thing with them, both things at once. They have to know your password and have the thing to be able to authenticate. Now, the frustrating thing is many sites, many services do not offer any type of mechanism by which to employ these hardware security keys. And so that leaves many people vulnerable to having their passwords stolen, their accounts hacked, and then people accessing their services. Now, over the years, a number of sites and apps have relied on two-factor authentication utilizing texting. And so many of you are familiar with trying to log into some type of service and then receiving a text, which then you would type in a code that you received into a website to as a secondary form of authentication. So this person knew the password, but this person was also able to receive a text on a device that they had registered with us and then enter a code that we sent them and be able to authenticate. The problem with that is there are ways that people can clone phones. There are ways that people can gain access, a man-in-the-middle attacks to those tokens that are sent out over email or text, and then they can still have that as well. So not only would they have hacked and received your password, but they may also have the ability to hack and receive these tokens and still log in on your behalf when that is not what you want. It becomes a little harder when they have to maintain this physical token. Now, can someone take this key? I mean, literally, my hardware security keys are on a key ring with the rest of my keys. So if someone stole my keys, then yes, they also have my key, but they have to know my password. So if I'm at lunch one day and somebody steals my keys, I'm still safe because I'm using multi-factors of authentication. So they would still have to know my password to be able to log into most of the services that I'm using. But if someone knew my password and was able to get a hold of that key, then yes, they would be able to authenticate to those services. So, you know, it's not 100%. It's just like everything else we do in security. It's another factor. It's another angle, another opportunity to make ourselves more secure. But we still need more sites, more services, more applications to allow us the opportunity to use these hardware security keys. So I am glad to see Apple making this functionality available for the Apple ID. Now, there's still a ways to go there. Honestly, this is a big frustration for me. I have a number of sites that I would love to set my key up with that I'm not able to. There are many that I can. So sites that I know I can, I'll share a few of them with you. So if you're not using multi-factor authentication with a hardware security key today, but would like to consider doing that, here's some sites where you could potentially set that up. One of them would be Google. So Google services can use multi-factor authentication with the use of a hardware security key. So I have my YubiKeys set up with my Google account. I have a few of them associated so that depending on the type of device I'm using, some of them may not have NFC, so I may have to use a different key that supports a different mechanism for authentications. It may connect in through USB-C or something like that. But I have Google set up with that. I have Reddit. My Reddit account is set up with multi-factor authentication tied into my security keys as well. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, Yubico is not the only company that makes these hardware security keys. There are other companies that support them, manufacture them. So do a little research. But I will include a link to Yubico on the show notes for those of you who want to go take a look at what they have to offer. And they are specifically mentioned on the support guidance that Apple released related to this feature. That, by the way, became available in iOS version 16.3. So I will include the version that it became available as well as the support article and then a link to Yubico in the show notes on the website. So please take a look there after you've listened to the episode and feel free to dig in a little bit deeper into that particular topic. I think there's a lot to have happen here. There's other sites that need to do this. My bank, for one, does not allow me to use this type of authentication mechanism. They do allow two-factor authentication, which they do over text. I think it's only text and not email. But once again, I feel more secure just because I've seen hacks where people are able to gain access to those tokens sent over text. I would feel more secure having the ability to use my hardware key Now, I will say this. My bank does have an option to use an RSA token that they provide to you. So that's the thing. You have to sign up for the service, and then they ship you this RSA token, which is a hardware token that could be used in the same manner. But it's, you know, it's one that they send you. They have to register. It would be nice if I could just register my own keys and kind of handle that process myself and have as many keys as I wanted in different formats and that type of thing. But that is not the way things work with that particular service. And so you'll probably find that you'll be frustrated with the number of the services that you use that will be, you know, similar. But I know Facebook is another one that I use my security key with. So it's just cool to have this other mechanism of providing some security to your accounts that you don't want other people having access to. And today it's becoming more and more difficult to keep people out of your stuff, and people are hacking these accounts and sharing them on the dark web and selling lists of people's username and passwords. And for those of you who don't follow our tip from earlier and you're using those same username and passwords across multiple sites, then you're really in trouble. And so more and more opportunities to use things like these hardware keys, I think, is excellent. All right, so that's our first article of the day. Really look forward to hearing your comments and thoughts and what other services you may be using that allow you to use your hardware security keys. Really also would like to hear if there's a different manufacturer of a key that you're using as opposed to Yubico that you think is really good, and for you to tell me why you think so. And I'd be glad to share that on our next episode. And so please follow up and do that as well. On to our next topic. You know, since the COVID pandemic began, we've been seeing a lot of activities in various markets related to, you know, what that means for the world on a macro level. But it also has had far-reaching impacts into the jobs that many of us work. And so if you've been paying attention recently, there's been a lot of companies that have been doing some pretty massive layoffs, and the pandemic just being one reason why many of these companies seem to be having these large numbers of layoffs. If we go back to November of last year, right there at the end of the year, we saw Meta lay off around 11,000 people. That was about 13% of their workforce. And, you know, they were talking about reasons related to slow ad revenue, people just not, going after those services anymore. That was kind of hurting their business, and there were other reasons cited as well. But you know, that was a major layoff by Meta. And then already this year, we've seen Google, IBM, SAP, and others that have made significant layoffs. I like to stay connected with a lot of my peers, and so I do so on LinkedIn, and so I'm sure many of you do the same. And I've been watching my LinkedIn every day, just, you know, cycle through numerous reports and people that I know or friends of friends talking about the fact that they've been notified that they were laid off. And, you hear just horrible stories. I remember one of the stories that I read related to Google. There was a mother who had just had a child. She was taking time off, to be with her child. And then right as she was soon to come back to work from leave, she was notified that she was let go. And so horrible way to end such an exciting period of your life and parenting. But that's the reality of what people are seeing right now. And so I'm seeing reasons all over the place for some of these layoffs. I really look forward to hearing some of your opinions and thoughts. Maybe some of you have been impacted. I would like to hear your stories. Maybe what if you have been impacted, maybe what your employer was telling you or citing as the reason. But some of the things that I'm seeing are, slowdowns in customer demand, as I mentioned with Meta related to their advertising revenue. But slowdowns in customer demand, recession worries. Of course, there's a lot of that going on right now. Like, what does the year 2023 look like for a lot of these companies? And we just won't know for some time what this year is going to look like. And so some of them are making decisions now based on, the potential that this year has to hold. And there are some negative indicators as to how business will go in the tech sector. And so they're making decisions that they feel like they need to. Many of them are still citing the pandemic. As I mentioned earlier, many companies are still reeling from things that happened during the pandemic. Either they surged, if you're one of those companies who offered services that were highly in demand during the pandemic, like Google services or Zoom, companies like that, for instance, you may have surged during the time of the pandemic, brought on significant levels of staffing to be able to support those services that were critical during that time frame. But now, as more and more people return to the office, and as some companies, struggle with the idea of having long-term remote workforces, that's significant impact. And what do you do in that situation? So I do kind of feel for some of these companies and the decisions they're having to make. But that doesn't make it any easier on the folks who are losing their jobs. And so, maybe that was the reason in the pandemic. There's just many other reasons related to the pandemic why, companies would need to make changes to staffing levels. But, this is just a lot of worry right now, especially in the tech sector. These companies are having these major layoffs. And if you work for a large tech company and you go to work tomorrow, you're kind of wondering, is my company considering any of these options right now as well? And will I have a job, or could my job change? If you're in management, a lot of times that middle management is the first layer to get removed. And you just don't know. And when they start to trim the fat, who's going to be considered a priority? And you really never know when your company might be considering those avenues. And so, my heart goes out to those of you who have been affected and impacted by those layoffs in any way. But I do, look forward to hopefully hearing some of your opinions and thoughts on, why we're seeing more of this, kind of how this impacts the tech sector going forward. And definitely, if those of you who have been laid off and impacted by these situations have things you want to share, I'd love to hear, you share and to share that with our audience as well, so that they can learn from those experiences. And on to our next topic. So the last thing I wanted to talk with you about today is something that's been going on for a little while. There's been a lot of controversy around the social networking app Twitter. And if you've been following that, Elon Musk was looking at doing a buyout of Twitter, and everybody got all worked up because, they were afraid of what he might do to the service. And so a bunch of people were wanting to jump ship. Prior to that, there were already a lot of frustrations and concerns around Twitter and how certain groups were being targeted. And there was just a lot of, hatred and just a lot of garbage on Twitter. And so it's kind of been under a lot of scrutiny over the last, couple of years anyway. And then with the recent changes to, concerns around changes that Elon might bring if he took over Twitter, a lot of people began to want to jump ship. And so they were looking at alternatives. And one of those alternatives is an open source project known as Mastodon. And a lot of people are asking questions like, what is Mastodon? And a lot of people are jumping to this service and not fully understanding what it is and how it differs from the services that many of you are familiar with today. And so I want to share a little bit about that, but I'm also going to link to in the show notes a recent blog post that I did titled Mastodon, a Decentralized Social Media Experience, where I go into a little bit more detail. I share some video content from the Mastodon project folks and try to give my explanation of what Mastodon is and kind of how it differs and what it offers to users. And so I'll give a little bit of detail here, but then I do want you to go back and take a listen or read that article that I wrote. I think it's a good way of breaking down some of these nuances. And there's a lot to keep in mind here because it is a totally different type of service than people are familiar with if they've gotten really deep into Twitter and how it works. So one of the biggest differences I'll tell you from the beginning is that Mastodon is a decentralized service. And now what does that mean? What makes that different and unique? If you think about services today that people often utilize from a social networking perspective, you're looking at things like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. These services are all centrally managed. So there's, in most of these cases, a company that offers a service that they manage centrally. They own it. They provide it. They own all aspects of it. They control content. They control, being able to kick people off or revoke access. They are in total control of the service that they provide and offer to you in every aspect. Mastodon is very different. It is a decentralized service. As opposed to everyone going to one website and logging in and getting the same curated experience that everyone else gets, Mastodon is set apart in that it's very decentralized, in that you can connect to Mastodon by multiple instances. People can set up their own Mastodon instance that they manage and curate and control and however they see fit. And so there are some of the same challenges that can exist in a centralized social networking site like Twitter or Facebook. Some of those same issues can still happen with Mastodon, but they happen on a much smaller scale. And if someone runs an instance and becomes a jerk, you can always move to another instance of Mastodon and have the same Mastodon experience with a different administrator, different owner. So you do have the ability to leave and still have Mastodon, whereas you can't leave Twitter and still have Twitter, right? And so basically people will use this open source software to build a server and stand up an instance of Mastodon that then can be federated, is the term, connected to other Mastodon instances. That happens organically over time. So as a Mastodon user, I'm connected to an instance. I can only talk to and see and read the comments of people who are connected to my instance until my instance begins to federate with others. And then more content, as those two communities share, begins to flow into the Mastodon instance that I'm a part of. And then I will begin to see more and more data as I begin to build relationships and other people on the instance begin to build relationships, and this federation process organically occurs. So it can feel like a much smaller world when you first connect to a Mastodon instance, and there are many. One of the larger original instances being like mastodon.social. You can go there, you can create an account, and you can have a very similar experience to like Twitter, but it's going to feel very small. And it's not like you're going to go out and just use somebody's handle and add them like you could on Twitter. You know, you could just go follow some celebrity within that instance that there may not be anyone you're familiar with. As a matter of fact, you may be one of the very few people on that instance. And so you may see very little commentary, very little talking, sharing, posting of content. It may be very quiet until you begin to add some people, and especially as you add people who are on instances other than the one that you originally joined, you'll begin to pull in content from them as well, and then your experience will continue to organically grow and get a little bit better. But in the very beginning stages of joining a Mastodon instance, it can feel very lonely, which is very different than using a service like Twitter. That's something that many people are not used to. They decide they want to jump ship. They go find a Mastodon instance. They subscribe to it. And then they're like, where's everything? Where's everyone? It feels very quiet. It feels very lonely here. That's why. And so it is a little bit different. It takes time to grow, the instance that you're on. It takes time to grow your feed so that you're seeing the types of relevant things that you want to see. But one thing you can do is go out and search for Mastodon users, and you can find people that are interested in some of the same types of topics that you are, add them to your feed, then you'll see them share things from other people, and then organically over time you'll begin to like those people and follow them, and then your content will continue to grow. And now, once again, back to kind of the differences, it is decentralized, but the owner of the instance has full control. So an owner of an instance can actually set their Mastodon instance where it does not federate, that it has no ability to connect to outside. So it stays a small community. Most users or most administrators do not choose to do that because they want to facilitate the growth of their community. But that is, an option. They also can have their own rules. So if you're leaving Twitter because you feel like you've been silenced or they have removed content that you thought was important, an administrator on Mastodon can do the same thing to you, But if that happens, you could always back up your account and move to another Mastodon instance where you have an administrator who doesn't act like that. So the ability to move and be flexible and that type of thing is very good and something you don't have an option of with a service that's centrally managed like Twitter is. So, you know, hopefully some of you have begin looking into some options like Mastodon. I have had an instance up at one point. I do not have one now. With all the things that I have going on, I do not currently see myself standing up a Mastodon instance. You know, if you guys have suggestions of places where you are hanging out a Mastodon, I may consider creating an account on another instance for you guys to follow and for me to follow you. So share that in the comments on our website for this episode at the bottom of the show notes. Just include some comments on where you're hanging out on Mastodon. If there's a place that you think we can, as a group, kind of join together and hang out, that would be great. And maybe at some point in the future, I'll stand up another Mastodon instance and allow us to have an opportunity to kind of build a community there. But not something that I'm looking at doing at the moment. So definitely check out the blog post, once again, Mastodon, a decentralized social media experience that I posted on nonstopsysop.com, and you know, also leave comments there. I'd love to hear your opinions and feedback on that article. Was it helpful? Did it help you understand what Mastodon is? That would be great to hear. As we close out the show today, I just want to say thank you for all those who have listened. Please continue to listen. If there are things that you think would make the show more exciting or better, I'm always willing to listen to your comments and opinions. I enjoy constructive criticism as long as you're polite, and would love to incorporate some of your ideas and thoughts into future shows. I hope that this will become exciting and informative and a diversion for you as you're, you know, once again, in your morning commute or sitting at the office, just bored doing whatever. I'd love to be able to fill some of that time and give you something interesting to think about and talk about going forward. So thank you for your time, your participation. Really look forward to connecting with many of you on our website, which once again is nonstopsysop.com. And you can feel free to look around there and you know, take a look at some of the things we have to offer. I do want to do some further work there on the website. We will be adding some Patreon stuff where you can go in and be a patron, subscribe, and there'll be certain things that you get for, you know, being a subscriber. So we'll begin to kick some of those things into gear as we continue to have future episodes. But definitely feel free to go on there and check that out. And please share this podcast with your friends, with your family, with people that you think would find it interesting. Would love to get the audience built up. And also, last note, check out the show notes. So when this is over, please go check out nonstopsysop.com. Check the post for episode number one. Down in the show notes, I'll have links to the things we discussed today. And then in the comments, really want to get your feedback. And I look forward to having more of these conversations with you weekly going forward. And once again, thank you for your time, your participation. And we will see you again on the next episode. Thank you. This is the Nonstop SysOp.